Listen up, football fans. You won't want to miss this.
Right now, new Bet365 customers bet $5 and get $200 in bonus bets, win or lose. So you could turn that $200 into something bigger when you bet on Moneyline, spread, totals, player props.
$200 in bonus bets when new customers bet $5. I know where I'm going to bet from now on. Download the app today and see why it's never ordinary at Bet365. Gambling problem? Call 1-800-GAMBLER. 21 plus only. Must be physically located in Ohio. T&Cs apply. In-app only.
Kevin Stefanski and Andrew Berry, do you think that they are good at what they do?
Yeah, I think so. Well, Stefanski, two-time coach of the year. Andrew Berry, I don't know. Do we blame the Haslams for the Deshaun Watson debacle?
The questions and the criticisms are more about ownership than anybody on the sideline or in the GM.
He's the head coach of a franchise owned by Jimmy Haslam, so who knows? If you put him in a more stable situation with a less volatile compound in the owner's box, maybe you'd get more.
The Ken Carmen Show with Anthony Lima on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, and wherever you get your podcasts.
It's Sal Capaccio.
Sal Capaccio. Sal Capaccio. Sal Capaccio. Sal Capaccio. Sal Capaccio. Sal Capaccio. Sal Capaccio.
On WGR.
These segments are always a treat, and they're even better when you get the text from Sal. I've got trivia for you. They're even better. So here we go. Sales got trivia. I'm ready. Bulldog is ready too.
Hang on. Let me just close up this terms and conditions thing from the FanDuel website, and I'll get back to
Sal, him. Will this be considered cheating if he has the FanDuel terms open?
No. I'm out. I closed it up. I'm gone.
All right.
It's over.
We're safe.
I think actually it might be pretty easy for you guys. It was something that I came across today. I'm like, wow, I don't remember that. And then I guess I do. So the Bills, you guys talked history about Bills and Saints here and when they've played and the games and how they've gone and all that. And, you know, I did a video on it today. I've been doing every time the Bills play a home game, I do a Highmark Stadium, you know, memories of teams. I've only been to one Bills Saints game. That was the 2017 game, actually, 47-10. I know you were at the 1-83. The one before the 2017 was 2009. Bills lose 27-7. Do you guys remember how the Bills scored their touchdown?
I don't. We were on the air. I mean, that's the one Bills Saints game I've not been to. I've been to all the others, but that game is not fresh in my mind at all. I can't.
Bulldog?
I don't know.
Is 2009? No, I don't. I don't know.
The Bills faked a field goal, and Brian Moorman threw it to Ryan Denny.
Okay, I remember Ryan Denny catching a fake field goal. I'm assuming he only did it once.
I thought they might have done another one against the Seahawks. They did. It was the year before that. Actually,
right.
The year before that, 2008. I thought there might have been one against the Texans at some point. I can't find that necessarily. But in this game, the Bills, this is the 2009 game. The Bills are down 7-0. And then Ryan Moorman lines up, and he's the holder.
Mm-hmm.
He gets the ball, and then he just starts taking off. He's going to run. He's a really good athlete, as you guys remember. And the guy's closing in, so he just dumps it off to Ryan Denny. It was a really well-designed fake field goal. And Denny runs in for the touchdown. Bills tie at 7-7. They want to lose 27-7. That was the week after Dante Whitner's pick six against the Buccaneers that year.
Yes.
Seattle rings a bell, too, for a fake field goal. I don't know who it was.
That was the year before in the opener.
Yeah, week 1.
Yeah.
All right. Why didn't the Bills just ever figure out what they needed to do, which was to make Brian Moorman the quarterback? I mean, all those years of struggles. One thing, I think this is right. If you look at the history of the Bills versus the Saints, and it's not like there's tons of it, you have to go back a long time to find a Bills quarterback to have started two games in a row against the Saints. I think it would be Rob Johnson. Because there was a win in 98, end of the season, that maybe was a meaningless game. And Johnson played at least some of that game. I'm not sure he started it. But the Bills won that game in New Orleans. And then 2001 opener, like, that's his team. And they lose to New Orleans.
I don't know if that's right. Kelly played in the 89 game they lost, and then he played again in New Orleans a few years later.
No, right. That's longer ago, though. Like, to go back.
Oh, I see what you're saying.
Like, you have Allen, saying, yeah. And then you have Tyrod Taylor, right. And then you have Thad Lewis, maybe, and then you have Edwards.
They've only played 12 games against each other, right? It's one of the fewest, I would say, around the league, probably, that they've played.
Yeah.
You know, the amount of games. I did the video today, and I was trying to do some research. In the four wins here, they've outscored the Bills 120-42. Like, that's crazy. Like, there are some big numbers, not just in 2017. Anyway, I wanted to ask you guys also, I don't remember this or know this. I can't think of the last time they ran a fake field goal, the Bills, then. Like, maybe I'm just blanking on one, and they absolutely ran one recently. Have they even run one under Sean McDermott?
Nothing comes to mind. A certain fake punt comes to mind that didn't work out. Yes. But I don't remember a fake field goal. I'm ready for one. I'm with you. I'd like to see it. Does this game? This game might not be the one, because then you're just showing off.
This is not a game. You're 15 point favorite. You dust off your fake field goal.
No,
no.
You shouldn't need one this week.
I don't think you waste it.
Well, you know, Bulldog, it gives the opponent something to prepare for later in the year. Right. You know that.
Fair.
Takes away time from practice.
Right. How much more? Seems we were talking about field goals and fake field goals. How much more time and attention are all NFL teams this week giving their special teams coordinator on field goal blocking? Because of what, like blocking four field goals, not to block field goals. Yep. I mean, to like defend against getting your field goals blocked, because it seemed like every game from like 3:45 to 4:15 last Sunday, it seemed like there were 12 blocked field goals. I know I'm exaggerating, but it was like one after the other for a little bit there.
First of all, I want to say I loved it. I love it. I don't want it to happen against the Bills necessarily, but, you know, I just think it's awesome that this is happening, because, you know, make special teams matter again, right? I mean, like, yeah, we know the kickoffs now and what's happening there. And if special teams coordinators can scheme up blocks, I think that's awesome. And it really forces a little bit more strategy going back and forth. To answer your question, we did ask Sean McDermott. He was asked this on Wednesday at the media session. And he said he was watching Sunday. He saw what was happening, and he shared texts with Chris Tabor about it. Like, right. they were texting about it. We asked Greg Rousseau after practice about it. He's like, yeah, it's an important, like, because Greg Rousseau is on the field goal block team. It's an important play. You know, he's like, you know, we work on it, and, you know, it can change a game, no doubt. So, yeah, I love seeing that. And it's so funny, like, because of the way the ball bounces and goes back, how many times you see guys just pick it up and run with it, which is what we saw a couple times. You see that in the Philly game. You see that in the Jets game, right? That's kind of what happens sometimes on field goal block. So, yeah, I do think they're paying more attention to it, to be honest with you, this week because of what happened Sunday.
While we're here on special teams and making special teams matter again, have you seen the rundown of what the maybe you were watching the game anyways, the Rams kickoffs against the Eagles? We've talked a few times, and I've said many times since the rules were tweaked again this offseason, you should be working with your kicker on perfecting like some sort of low liner knuckleball, hard to handle. Yep. The Rams are doing it like on every kickoff. And they have the best starting opponent drive start, I think, in the league as part of it, or at least after kickoffs. They are doing a great job. It's really, you know, there's certainly some luck the way the ball bounces, but the Eagles had a hell of a time fielding kickoffs against the Rams last Sunday.
I did not see this. I saw an article that I think probably was this article referencing it, and I meant to kind of make sure I go back and read it because people were sharing it and going, oh, this is pretty cool. But yeah, you're right about it. I mean, the whole thing with kickoffs has kind of forced a lot of teams and coordinators and coaches to really kind of rethink how they envision things and want to have a new edge. And if this is the new edge, then great, good on them, because I think that's pretty cool, because you're really forcing the other team that you're playing to have to kind of figure it out and say, what are we going to do here? And, yeah, that's pretty cool.
The Eagles, I didn't know this, but I've seen a lot of it, not just from the Rams. The Eagles had five consecutive drive starts on Sunday from their 20, 19, 9, 14, and 35, and then the 10. And before you might wonder, well, did the Rams just pin them deep on a punt? Those were all after scoring drives.
Right.
They were all off kickoffs. There might have been a penalty or two to push them back, but, like, 20, 19, 9, and 14.
Right. They're doing great.
That worked out.
Yeah.
That's not even like, I might have seen Baltimore take a touchback on a ball that landed short. So they started at their 20 Monday night. I think it was Baltimore in that game against the Lions. All right. Sal, no change to the injury report today. I'm a day late on Spencer Brown not being here yesterday. He was hurt some point during the game. And, you know, for whatever that matters, it is. He's not a guy we talk about all the time, but you might. I know Sal will. You might remember a time where Spencer Brown was kind of just a punching bag, you know, with fans. And we, of course, everybody knows the story of Allen sort of reforming his technique and becoming, you know, an all-time great. And boy, Spencer Brown did some of this, I want to say.
Yeah, Spencer Brown. I think what people would. Brandon Bean explained to us, I think, you know, right after he got his contract extension, Spencer Brown, we were talking about him, is, you know, he said when Spencer came in the league, you know, he had a bit of a back issue they were dealing with, and it really cost him some time. It cost him some development, and that's what people don't, like, really think about a lot, right? You want these immediate results. We talk about the guys from this year's draft class, right, and they're not playing and how all that is working out, and sometimes you don't really understand what's going on behind the scenes and why guys might not be able to make an immediate impact. But once he really became healthy and really worked hard and, you know, became a part of the program, so to speak, you know, Spencer Brown really became a very, very important big piece for the Buffalo Bills. And I think he's been very good at right tackle. He is a very good athlete for his size. There's no doubt about that. He allows the Bills to do a lot of different things, both from the right side and the left side. They have really good athletes on both sides at bookends. And now they have them both locked up, by the way. I mean, you know, Spencer Brown and Deion Dawkins are both locked up long-term with contract extensions, and that is a great, great thing to have. By the way, Spencer Brown, one of only three Bills so far this year to play 100% of the snaps on offense or defense. Do you guys know the other two?
And they took their line, some of their line out in the Jet game, so I wouldn't say any other. I might say
one
Dawkins.
Other lineman. Dawkins. One other lineman. Nope, Osiris Torrance.
Okay.
And their one guy on defense has played every single snap so far. Rapp? Every one of them. Other safety, Cole Bishop.
Bishop, okay. Yeah, there was the one game, was it maybe the Jet game, where Bishop played the whole thing. That was their way ahead. That was notable.
Right, right.
Good.
Well, if Brown can't go, not that, you know, he talked yesterday. He was on One Bills Live. You and I think, talked about it yesterday, Sal, how he said he thinks, you know, guys always say, I'll be fine, I'll be fine. No work again today. We'll see. Maybe he can do something tomorrow. If he can't go, that's Vandermark, right? And that went pretty well last year, didn't it? He had to step in one game, and I think it went well.
He did. The Chiefs game, actually. He played in the Chiefs game. He was he started for, was it Deion even?
No.
Did they miss Deion, or was it for Brown?
I think it was Brown, that's what I remember anyway. I think you're right about that.
But I think it was the Chiefs game, if I remember right. Either way, you're right. And I think even going back to New England maybe the year before, like, Ryan Vandermark's had to play in a pinch a few times, and I think he's done very well when he's been called upon. What's funny is about that, he wasn't even supposed to be the swing tackle last year. He was inactive. And that's because Travis Clayton had taken his Tylon Grable had taken his job as the swing tackle. He became inactive, but then Tylon Grable got hurt, so Vandermark became the guy again, and he was put into that position. Well, Tylon Grable's hurt again this year, so if Spencer Brown can't go, I think it's definitely would be Ryan Vandermark based on, you know, who they have available and what the lineup would look like.
Right, it's Chase Lunt is the other backup tackle that I see here.
And he plays a little tackle, a little guard, and I think honestly, Bulldog, like, Chase Lunt is one of these guys where I just think that he's on the roster because they don't want to lose him because they like him, but I don't know if there's any chance he'll ever actually play this year outside of maybe, you know, if things go where they have things, you know, in hand late in the year. I don't know if they want to put him on the field. I just think they don't want to lose him to waivers is why he's on the team right now.
Mm-hmm. They can't get that guy Bills back here who was named Bills, like 15-point favorites.
Keaton Bills?
Keaton Bills. Too late. No chance. Is he somewhere else? I don't even know.
They did sign Nick Broeker, actually, back to the practice squad. He actually would be a guy that you could turn to. But that's a guy they had drafted, and he was gone. But, yeah, Vandermark's really the only guy. You're right, Chase Lunt would be another guy. Now, Alec Anderson can actually play all five positions. It's not his normal spot to play outside, but he kind of plays a little tackle when he's the sixth offensive lineman anyway, but it's not his normal spot, so it would be Vandermark.
Sal Capaccio on the West Hur Hotline. Last week with the Dolphins, I mean, last week at this time, we were out there, and the conversation was a lot about, well, Bills are a big favorite. What was it, 12 last week? Mm-hmm. How could they lose? You know, and things, sort of the traditional recipe for an upset. But that was a Miami team that had given the Bills close games. I mean, not the Bills have won all these games against Miami, but a lot of them were close, as it turns out, was the game last Thursday night. There isn't that with New Orleans. Miami, you might kind of think, and this is easier now to say after that game, but, you know, maybe the wheels come off. But that's a team that's had good seasons and a playoff appearance or two. You know, like, it's a good rivalry, all that stuff. The Saints are none of these things. The Saints would have been, I think, the most popular pick in the league before the season to finish with the worst record. One of two or three teams, at least, for that. And nothing so far this year has gotten anybody off that spot. I mean, the game in Seattle is 37-3 midway through the second quarter. Come on. So we can say the same thing, Sal, about how they might do it, but you know, turnovers, right? So it's the same things. But it's much harder for me to see New Orleans hanging on Sunday than it was to see Miami doing it.
Yeah, I would agree. And, like, I mean, even if the Bills were to – the Bills have now gone 8 straight games without a turnover. They've won the turnover bat or have not lost it for 24. Even if those things turned, I think it's still going to be tougher for New Orleans. They would have to still – you know, win the game. In a game like against Miami, if you give them a couple mistakes, they could have wound up beating you. I think New Orleans, that's the path. They would have to have those things happen. I think they'd have to do some other things on top of that, and it would be tough for them. Now, that said, one thing the Bills do very well is run the football. New Orleans has actually been pretty good at stopping the run this year. They're only allowing 3.6 yards per run so far this year. So, you know, it's probably something that, you know, if the Bills are going to have to maybe they want to throw the ball, and that's great. You know, Josh Allen can throw the ball, but at the same time, maybe they try to put him under a little bit of pressure. They're in top 10 in sacks per pass attempt on defense. They have some talent on that side of the ball, and they can try to get – they'll be aggressive. I always think that, you know, when a team loses like the Saints did last week, they'll go into the next week with something different, changing up. They'll have tendency breakers because they'll think, we got to kind of do something different. This isn't working. What are we going to do? And that's when you can surprise a team. And we all remember what happened with the Bills when they went to Minnesota in Josh's rookie year, week 3, and they're 17-point underdogs. They wind up winning. A few plays go their way, and then suddenly you're like, wait a minute, what's going on here? You know, we're winning this football game, and you know the other team starts to panic a little bit, maybe because they're supposed to be this big favorite. They make a few mistakes. That's probably the path to victory for the Saints here. I also think Spencer Rattler is not that bad, actually. When I watch him play, he's got some arm talent. He's a good athlete. I just don't know if everything can happen for him all in one in a game like this. The offensive line isn't that great, and you know they have some skill position guys, but it just feels like they're really just undermanned overall.
Rattler has a birthday on Sunday, by the way. He'll be 25. And he's 0-9, but you like him. And you're not the first person to say that. I was thinking about this earlier in the week.
Yeah.
Brett Coleman, who does a lot of film study, has been on our show before, said after their opener against Arizona, which they lost, he thought that Rattler was, you know, not bad. Yeah. So what was one thing about last week, the Seattle game, which I really only saw from the box score in addition to a couple of highlights, but Chris Olave had like 10 for 57 or some kind of stat line like that.
Exactly what it was, yeah.
And I don't know how that's possible for a player like that. I mean, he's somebody, he's a burner. Like Olave is somebody that can sort of stretch the field. But for whatever reason, that did not happen in a game they were down big in. I would think that they'd like to, you know, bump up that yards number, even if it meant cutting receptions in half to get more, you know, important plays out of Olave. He's good enough.
Yeah, they are. I think their overall yards per attempt is really down. It's under 6 yards per attempt for the Saints. So feels like they're kind of they want to be a little more methodical, not drive the ball down the field. And that's probably how they want to beat the Bills, right? I mean, maybe they let it all hang out and they throw the ball down the field. But, you know, the path usually is, hey, keep the ball at Josh Allen's hands. How do you do that? You have you have a shorter passing game. You have a good running game. And you do that because right now they're just not pushing the ball down the field that much. He's at less than 6 yards attempt, like I said, and that's not a high number at all. That's a low, very low number in the NFL.
Yeah. 4.7 as a team, net yards per attempt.
Yeah. Yeah.
The Bills are at 7.3, which is fourth. And even the Bills, there's some run after the catch element here, but even they, like in the Dolphin game, it was historic for how short both teams' pass attempts were.
Yeah, I'd be bracing for just like a lot of Alvin Kamara in the flat type stuff, yeah, like that, right? So, you know, the Bills will have that buttoned up because Miami stung them a few times with some of that on Thursday night. Mm-hmm. So, you know, and Kamara is, you know, he's excellent. So, you know, they're going to have to be buttoned up in that area. I'm really curious to see if someone other than Joey Bosa can get some sort of pass rush consistently here. I feel like Rousseau, you know, I know some of the metrics are, you know, he's winning reps, but I don't feel like I'm seeing him. Bosa, I'm noticing pretty regularly being disruptive and getting in the backfield. I feel like Rousseau, I'm still sort of waiting for that to arrive this season. And I don't know, maybe Sunday is a spot for that to happen for him.
Yeah, I'd like to see it too. Hasn't happened and flashed as much as you'd like this year, but you're right. After the game, going back and looking at some things and then seeing some numbers, you know, Rousseau had a better game than I think a lot of people realized overall. But you need to get to the passer a little bit more than what the Bills have, I think, overall, to finish the play. That's the big thing, finishing. They actually got around to a – they had a good plan, though, Miami did. They got him out of the pocket a little bit, and then he scrambled here and there. I do think Ed Oliver matters here. And, again, just to go back to injuries, by the way, guys. So, no Ed Oliver, no Matt Milano again today. And the good news was A.J. Epenesa did practice today. After, remember, yesterday it was limited with the pec, and we were wondering what happened.
Yeah.
He was back in the field practicing. No Oliver, no Milano. I do think Oliver matters here. I mean, Oliver's a penetrator up the middle, and if you don't have somebody who has to kind of account for that, then you can concentrate a little bit more on the edges. I'm thinking mostly about even like running backs and pass protection. You know, you go inside out first. You look the middle, A gap, B gap. And if Ed Oliver's coming up the A gap, you got to take him. If there's nobody there, you can help out on Rousseau. You can help out on the other side. So I do think getting Ed Oliver back at some point would help. But as of right now, it doesn't look like it's trending that way for this week.
15.5, 48.5. So 32-16.5. The Bills at, again, a 30-plus point per game pace this year, and implied total would have them upping that even a little bit more. All right, Sal, thanks for this. We'll talk tomorrow.
You got it, guys. Thank you.
All right, it's our dude Sal Capaccio on the Wester Hotline. His appearances are always brought to you by New York's only outlet liquor. When you need to stock up, it's the place to buy a case. What's your outlet?
Refuse to bring up the Yankees, as you may have noticed. Why isn't he bringing up? Because the Yankees rudely have spoiled the Blue Jays party, at least for now. 5 up with 12 left. Now it's tied.
Yeah. Well, you have the Red Sox to thank in part for that because they won the first 2 of 3 in Toronto. They wrap that up tonight, too.
I think I have mostly the Blue Jays to thank.
I guess.
They stopped hitting.
Yeah.
That'll hurt.
Yeah, 4-1, 7-1, the scores the last two nights.
I mean, Kansas City, they lost 20-1 on maybe Friday. Terrible. The one game they did win there, they might have won like 7-4 or something like that, but... Detroit-Cleveland is great. NL wildcard is great. Reds won today to get a little closer. Mets are up in that race, even though they keep losing.
Cleveland is just the first game of that Detroit series. That finishes up tonight, too. And Cleveland is now in front after, 12.5 games August 25th, and now they're ahead. They got to Skubal on Tuesday night without even the ball leaving the infield. Like, they were behind and took the lead with just playing station to station. Amazing. And last night, some guy that only has had one home run going into the game hit the go-ahead home run for them last night. It's just magic pixie dust everywhere for Cleveland right now. Like, they just can't do anything wrong. The stadium's pretty packed, and it's a really great scene going on right now in Cleveland.
Playoffs are next week. Should be fun. 803-0550 for your calls. Bills and Saints Sunday. A lot of the Saint conversation has been about past games. I guess this one doesn't quite have everyone's attention yet. I think we're a little bit... I'll admit to being a little bit lazy on this game so far. It's, getting near the weekend, though. Mike Schoep and the Bulldog back after sports. We've got the Sabres again tonight. Preseason action in Detroit. Pre-game at 6 here on WGR.
Bet365 is paying out before the final whistle.
Check out Bet365's unrivaled early payout offer. When you bet on a team to win and they take a 17-point lead, you get paid no matter the final score. Forget the final whistle and start counting that cash. Hold up. You get early payout on parlays, too.
Download the app and see why it's never ordinary at Bet365. Gambling problem? Call 1-800-GAMBLER. 21 plus only. Must be physically located in Ohio. T&Cs apply.
It's not coming from Brent Veach and Andy Reid, and it's not coming from Sean McVay. It's coming from the Cleveland Browns. And you're seeing exactly
why it's not coming from those guys? Because they didn't draft him. They didn't want him to begin with. This was the one team that wanted him, and they're telling you he's behind. Maybe it's not a grand conspiracy. Maybe everybody is right, and the Shador fans, you wackos. Maybe it's your guy is just not ready. Maybe you got to come to grips with it.
The Ken Carmen Show with Anthony Lima on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, and wherever you get your podcasts.
On third downs, just making sure that we're more so on the same page and not getting put on our heels more often. And I feel like that's something that I'm not saying we easily can fix it, but we can fix it. So just showing that kind of, I'd say, edge and that being ready is going to be a huge help for us.
Taron Johnson, fine slot corner for the Bills. Had a great career here. Mike Schoep and the Bulldog, thanks for listening. The Sabres play in Detroit tonight, pregame at 6. We have the volume turned down because, of course. But I just saw Rory McIlroy doing a media session, and it said on the screen, McIlroy talks about Seve Ballesteros. And he was my favorite golfer. Until I got into Ryder Cup, which I didn't know what that was until maybe even like when it was in Rochester or early 90s.
Then you didn't like the fancy Spaniard kicking the U.S. around, did you?
Well, he was like a game player. He liked to psych guys out. I wonder if he ever did the Robitaille thing.
What's the Robitaille thing now?
Mike Robitaille and I were playing at River Oaks once. And this story doesn't go very far, okay? Just not to, okay. This isn't just me forcing in, as far as you know, Mike Robitaille's name. But we were at 17, and I teed off, and we were playing a match by a couple other guys, and he and I were opponents, and I hit a good drive on 17. 17's a hole you can get to in two, par five. So it's a big, big hole to have a big drive on, and it's like the end of the match, pretty much. Two holes left. High drama on the island. And Roby says, you're going to have to re-tee that. And I said, what do you mean? He's like, he puts his club down on the, you know, between the white markers, because we were playing the whites, because I remember them being white. And he's like, you were ahead of the line. Like, no way. It's like, no, you were. I'm looking right at it. You teed up like, whatever, an inch in front of the, you know, the white markers.
Yeah.
And he would not quit. Like, Mike, you're not, you can't be serious. You're going to make, what? You can't be serious. An inch? I mean, I don't think so anyway, but really?
Yeah.
He's like, I saw what I saw. What are you telling me? I'm a liar? Like this, you know, and you know, Mike is, he's a beauty. Like, I don't know if he really means it.
You can't be sure, right? Yes.
And I sort of start to put another ball down and like, is this a penalty? What even is this? Are we're really doing this? I mean, I thought this was friendly. And he just wouldn't speak. You know, and then eventually I think I did put a ball down and like sort of stood my routine, you know, stood behind the ball and like thinking to myself, oh my God. And then he swore at me. He's like, come on. I'm just kidding. I just wanted to see how far you'd go. Try that one if you know you want to in your friendly matches.
Right, right.
If it's close at all, maybe you can get away with it. Be careful if you go all the way with it, though.
Yeah, you're right.
I mean, I'm not sure I would have forgiven him.
Right.
Come on, Mike.
Yeah.
Let's go to JD here. Hello.
Good stuff, guys. Hi. I just wanted to ask you about Bill's defense. I was watching replays of the game this week, as I always do, watching the all 22. And I'm looking at the Bills when they're in a straight-up 4-3, like when they put Shaq Thompson out there with Terrell Bernard and Dorian Williams. And I know this is all situational, and I don't mind Nickel as a base D, but I think the Bills look really good when they have a little more muscle with an extra linebacker, have a straight-up 4-3. I think they should do a three-linebacker set a lot more often. And I'll hang up and take your comments.
Yeah, well, good catch. You're noticing something that I think has been going on, and it is matchup specific. They used three linebackers a good amount, I believe, in the playoff win over Baltimore, and then again on opening night against them. You know, it didn't help them stop the run game in the opener this year. They did a decent job against the run. It was really passing that did Baltimore did a lot of damage in the playoff win for the Bills. But they are using more of that. And it's notable that they did it against Miami without Milano, right? Like Milano would be, having him be a part of that along with Dorian Williams as the third linebacker maybe would make sense. But they're doing it with Milano out with an injury. And, you know, it's not a heaping ton, but I think it's more than they've done in the past. And I think anything that they can do to give themselves more looks, more variety, that includes being more blitz heavy, which they have been. I never saw the numbers from the Miami game, but I know the first 2 weeks they were like top six. I said it a few times on last week's pregame show before the Miami game that their numbers, the percentage of blitzing was way up for them in the first couple of weeks of the season. You know, we'll see if these trends hold, but I think if they've got the right personnel matchup, I think it makes sense for them to be as multiple as they can be. It's the same sort of thing, same sort of concept on offense, right? Just give teams more to prepare for, have more different answers to questions and different tactics teams are going to try to pull on you, and just sort of get comfortable with it. And I feel like the Bills have been comfortable enough here early this year, and you know, against the Jets, and maybe the Saints will be another game where, I don't know, I don't want this to sound as lazy as it might sound, but you can kind of tinker, you know, like let's see what combinations work best against certain formations, that kind of stuff, because operationally what matters the most is how it's all humming by the time January comes. So I think you use these games where you're comfortably ahead, hopefully, like the Jet game, to use different things and see how it works. Yeah, I was happy to see Thompson on the field on Thursday. I think it's good to have that in the bag. You know, I mean, we all love Taron Johnson, and he's meant a lot to this team as the Bills have been growing from the time they were going into a contender to now having been a contender for these many years in a row now. He's been an integral part of all of that. But I think having more guys and more different sets to do different things is nothing but a good thing.
Yep. I don't have anything to add. Did you talk yesterday about when they would lose their first game? Did you play up the 17-0?
That did not come up. No, I did not. No, didn't get there.
I will predict that they will not go undefeated.
Bold.
I know, but not really, right? Good one. Good, Mike. That helps us. But I was talking to Sam Panayotovich, who was not on our show today, even though it was mentioned that he would be. That'll be tomorrow. On his podcast, Chicken Dinner, by the way, it's called. And like, when's their first loss? And he and I had the conversation you and I have had so often about, like, oh my God, New Orleans, New England, Atlanta. I mean, that might be tougher at Atlanta. These are, at least it's a road game. Carolina, we'll see what the Chiefs are. Can never take them for granted. On and on. Miami, Tampa. Like, this could go a long time. I'm not sure what the longest the Bills ever have been undefeated is. Might even be 5-0.
I mean, I remember a 5-0 in the 90s 91. When they went to Kansas City and got drilled.
And you had a 15-team parlay that lost and had the first 14, right?
Right.
That's what I now think of when I think of that game, which is better than the game.
It could have changed the entire course of my life.
Yeah.
Seriously, not to be dramatic, but I would have won like 10 grand. And at that age, I could have been dead in a week.
Oh, you'd still have it. I'm sure you'd still have it.
Could have been horrible.
At Houston, at Pittsburgh, Cincinnati, at New England, at Cleveland. That's not a gauntlet.
No.
But
no.
It's, you know, there's a loss in there, I'm saying. And then the Eagles.
Yeah.
By the way.
I have not really spent, I mean, we've talked about it a few different times, and mostly it's,
listen up, football fans. You won't want to miss this.
Right now, new Bet365 customers bet $5 and get $200 in bonus bets, win or lose. So you could turn that $200 into something bigger when you bet on Moneyline, spread, totals, player props.
$200 in bonus bets when new customers bet $5. I know where I'm going to bet from now on. Download the app today and see why it's never ordinary at Bet365. Gambling problem? Call 1-800-GAMBLER. 21 plus only. Must be physically located in Ohio. T&Cs apply. In app only.
Kevin Stefanski and Andrew Berry, do you think that they are good at what they do?
Yeah, I think so. Well, Stefanski, two-time coach of the year. Andrew Berry, I don't know. Do we blame the Haslams for the Deshaun Watson debacle?
The questions and the criticisms are more about ownership than anybody on the sideline or in the GM.
He's the head coach of a franchise owned by Jimmy Haslam, so who knows? If you put him in a more stable situation with a less volatile compound in the owner's box, maybe you'd get more.
The Ken Carmen Show with Anthony Lima on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, and wherever you get your podcasts.
In the form of, what do you do at the end if you are 16-0, right, or 15-0, and you've got the one seed locked up? Like, how hard do you want to go after being 17-0? And that's, you know, that's a thought experiment and a hypothetical that can be fun to sort of wrestle with. Like, really, I do not look at the schedule and just think, sure, they're going to – I know they're – I think they're better than all the teams that they're playing. Philadelphia is probably the closest right now with the form teams are in currently, I would say, that I would maybe be the most even matchup. But that said, I mean – And this team is older and maybe hopefully smarter and knows more about the pitfalls like of avoiding an Urban Meyer nightmare, you know, because that team was great when they went down there and lost 9-6 or whatever the hell that was.
It was 9-6.
I'd hope that they know how to avoid that, but I just don't expect to go through a 17-game NFL season regardless of how weak the schedule looks and think they're just going to win them all, that the ball's always going to bounce their way and that Allen's not going to ever throw it to the other team.
Ever again.
It is going to be jarring when it happens, I think, because it feels like it's such a faraway thing right now. But
if he never throws another interception, will they waive the 5-year waiting period for
Canton? Right.
Well, they were 14.5-point favorites in Jacksonville.
Right.
And they're 15.5-point favorites this week. Same total, 48.5. Never know. I know there are people that resent the whole thing of looking ahead. I don't know. Maybe I should apologize because I'm just obsessed with it. I just can't really take this game that seriously to be, you know, just sort of shun any kind of look ahead. I mean, we're always looking ahead. It's always about like the standings and buys and matchups. So, I don't think I really should apologize for that, but I recognize they're, you know, this is not something you'd want the players on the team. This is not a conversation you want the players to be having.
I feel.
When do we have our first loss?
I feel really comfortable that they're probably not.
They should know better.
Yeah.
They should know better than to be having that conversation, at least, you know, where anybody could hear them. don't even think about it. We'll do that. We'll do that for you.
We got that covered.
We got that covered. The Sabres are in Detroit for a preseason game tonight. We'll have pregame coming up in about 20 minutes. Mike Schoep and the Bulldog, WGR.
Bet365 is paying out before the final whistle.
Check out Bet365's unrivaled early payout offer. When you bet on a team to win and they take a 17-point lead, you get paid no matter the final score. Forget the final whistle and start counting that cash. Hold up. You get early payout on parlays, too.
Download the app and see why it's never ordinary at Bet365. Gambling problem? Call 1-800-GAMBLER. 21 plus only. Must be physically located in Ohio. T&Cs apply.
Not coming from Brent Veach and Andy Reid, and it's not coming from Sean McVay. It's coming from the Cleveland Browns. And you're seeing exactly what people outside of Cleveland think of the Browns, outside of Browns.
You know why it's not coming from those guys?
Because they didn't draft him. They didn't want him to begin with. This was the one team that wanted him, and they're telling you he's behind. Maybe it's not a grand conspiracy. Maybe everybody is right, and the Shador fans, you wackos.
Maybe it's your guy is just not ready. Maybe you got to come to grips with it.
The Ken Carmen Show with Anthony Lima on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, and wherever you get your podcasts.